Whether he was tripping over the ottoman as Rob Petrie, driving a flying car in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, or fighting crime between patients on Diagnosis Murder, Dick Van Dyke has been entertaining audiences for over 50 years. His comic gifts, physical dexterity, and just plain charm have made him a beloved icon in show business. And now he's written a memoir called Dick Van Dyke, My Lucky Life in and Out of Show Business. It's published by Crown Archetype, and I'm very pleased that it brings him to our show today. Hi.
Thank you.
You grew up in Danville, Illinois. What was that like? Was that a hotbed of showbiz?
Not exactly, although, strangely enough, out of that town came Bobby Short, Donald O'Connor, Gene Hackman, and Helen Morgan from the 30s. Quite a few entertainers.
That is impressive.
I don't know whether it was the water or we just wanted out of there.
Well, were you aware of that at the time?
No. Well, I knew Donald. We were the same age. And I knew Bobby Short, who was so big at the Carlisle here in town for so many years. I didn't know Gene until later. But they were all performers as kids, and I wasn't.
Well, the picture on the cover of your book has you with your leg high up in the air, kicking high up in the air. So the Donald O'Connor water obviously got through to you.
I can't do that anymore, incidentally.
Your brother Jerry followed you into show business. Had anyone in your family been in it before you?
No, I broke the ground myself.
And how did you get interested? And I heard that it was watching Laurel and Hardy comedies. Is that true?
Well, I was a big fan of Laurel and Hardy as a kid. I learned to do Laurel and Hardy impressions by the time I was eight.
And I Which just, one? You would
Stan,
be
a, Stanley.
Yeah, the tall, skinny guy.
Look, I resembled him the most. And I got to meet him in later life, and a charming gentleman.
Did you? But you toyed with the idea of becoming a Presbyterian minister. You weren't thinking of show business when you were a kid, even though you appeared in all the high school plays?
When I was 12, well, I was in high school plays. But prior to that, I thought about becoming a minister and realized I wasn't cut out for it.
And in this book, you talk about your ideas about spirituality. So have they evolved over the years?
Yes. Yeah, I think they have. Somebody said the difference between faith and belief is what you've been told, and faith comes from within. So I'm more a person of faith than a religious person.
You were concerned about being drafted for the war in 1943, and then your mother came up with some surprising news about your age.
Yes. She was doing the dishes. I was drying. And I said, Mom, you know, I'm going to be 18 soon, and I really don't want to be in the infantry. I think I'll enlist. She says, I have something to tell you. You're already 18. She told me I was premature. As it turned out, I was a love child. And in those days, in 1925, that didn't go out. That was a scandal. So my parents went to Missouri and had me there and then came back later.
Oh, that's why you were born in Missouri.
That's why I was born in Missouri.
And so they just lied about your age? They pushed you back 9 months or so?
Yeah. I think the story was, my actual birthday was December 13th. It had always been March 21st. Mm-hmm. I was a Pisces up until I was 18.
Well, your parents did get married.
Oh, yes, they did, yeah. I think being a love child is a compliment.
It's a nicer phrase than some of the other that have been applied.
That's the one I choose.
You characterized your life as lucky, but your early career didn't sound so lucky. You actually bought a car without a top?
That's right, and no second gear. It was an old 1935 Ford. I paid $75 for it. It had no top, and I just drove in the rain at the time. I was happy to have transportation.
And the gear? What, did you just drive in one gear?
Well, I had first and third. So I couldn't go up any hills or anything.
And then you started an ad agency, which went bust. So where's all the luck?
Well, that was an older friend of mine, Wayne Williams. I was announcing at the local station. I thought I was going to be a television announcer. This was before TV. And actually, there wasn't enough business in a small town like Danville for an advertising agency. But I did, I sold a few commercials, and I did a record show, and I did the news and everything.
And is that what you thought your career would be in radio and then later in television?
I was looking forward to being a television announcer. I never gave a thought to singing or dancing or anything else.
You were already in your mid-30s when you appeared in Bye Bye Birdie.
Yes.
So, but would you have considered that your breakthrough, or was it when you were doing all these other things like filling in for CBS personalities on TV or doing that TV morning show in New Orleans or my favorite, when you worked as half of a record pantomime act called The Merry Mutes.
That's right. That started. We went to L.A. Really as a lark and started playing small clubs around Los Angeles. We were always going to go home and do something serious with our lives. And one thing led to another. I never got out of show business.
Your partners never really made it big in shows.
Well, he opened a nightclub in Atlanta called The Wits End and had shows on the road. He was quite successful.
But was doing that a good preparation for some of the physical comedy you would come to do later?
Yes, yes. It was a lot of physicality. It was a very popular form of entertainment back then, record pantomimes. Mm-hmm. There were acts all over New York. We played the Blue Angel years ago. I think so. That's where I got the physical part. That and Stan Laurel, of course.
And then it must have helped you later when you appeared in movie musicals, because everything is about pantomiming in the musicals, isn't
it? Of course. It's just exactly the same thing.
But did you want to get into acting, or did you just think of yourself as somebody who would have a career in television, doing game shows and whatever else?
I did game shows. I was very bad at it, which got me out auditioning for Broadway shows. And I ended up in a review called Girls Against the Boys with Burt Lahr and Nancy Walker.
Was that a good show?
I thought it was, but it only ran 2 weeks. Fortunately, someone saw me in it, and I got to audition for Gower Champion for Bye Bye Birdie and did a little soft shoe number. And he said, "You have the part," right on the spot, like in Hollywood. And I said, "Mr. Champion, I don't dance." And he said, "We'll teach you what you need to know." So I was in my 30s before I ever started to dance, and loved it.
And also had the kind of audition that people just fantasize about.
Yes, like in the movies. He went right up on the stage. I always thought it was because he saw himself in the part. We were almost identically the same size and build.
But it was – so that was a breakthrough, and then you did the movie later.
Oh, yes.
But the Dick Van Dyke Show, that was your – you'd already appeared in the Phil Silvers Show.
Yes, I had, a couple of times. That's right.
Well, you played a hasty baseball player.
Oh, God, it was a great experience. He was a wonderful comedian. But Carl Reiner saw me in Bye Bye Birdie, and that's how I got that part, which changed my life.
And did you know that it was going to be such a groundbreaking show? Because there were so many shows that followed that were based on the same concept of building up this ensemble cast and having everybody a character you'd recognize. Maury Amsterdam could just give you a look and people would start laughing because they knew the way his mind was working based on other shows they'd seen.
He had a Rolodex of jokes in his head, thousands.
Oh, did he ad-lib during the show?
To some extent. He wasn't supposed to, but if he thought of a new insult, he would throw it in.
Well, that show actually had a shaky start, then became a big hit. You won 3 Emmys for it.
Yeah, 4. I won 4 for that show, yeah.
Well, did you wonder why it didn't hit immediately? Was it just too different?
Well, no, we were on against Perry Como, who was very, very hot at the time. Nobody saw us. Fortunately, they gave us some summer reruns, and we kind of picked up an audience then. And I knew from the beginning, Carl had sent me something like 10 scripts, and of the best writing I had ever in my life read. So I just knew it had to be good.
And he said he wanted to write a show that would hold up for 50 years.
Yes.
It kind of did when it was repeated on Nick at Night. Did you get residuals for that?
Yes. Well, I'm one of the owners of the show, so it's been a real annuity for me. But he never allowed us to use any slang of the day, any current events, to keep it timeless. And I think even the clothes are back in style.
Because to some degree, it's like Everybody Loves Raymond. Many years later, the idea is that this is really about the way married couples interact, the way people have to deal with
relationships. So many shows a day are just one-line jokes, one after another.
Would it have worked as well if Mary Tyler Moore hadn't been cast as your wife?
I don't think so. That chemistry was just pure luck. Carl picked her. And in the beginning, she seemed such a serious actress to me. I said to Carl, "Can she do comedy?" I think that's the last time that question was ever asked.
But people assumed that you were really married, that the chemistry was that good.
That's true. That's true. A lot of people thought we were married in real life.
And then you did a bunch of movies. Mary Poppins is one that people will remember. And you did your own stunts in that?
Yes. I've always done my own stunts. I have the broken bones to prove it. Yes, I did all my own dancing, all my own stunts, and it was a great. It was not work. It was hard, but one of the great experiences of my life, that movie.
And why did you do your own stunts when it was dangerous?
I don't know why they let me, uh-huh. For insurance purposes.
I mean, Jackie Chan does his own stunts, yeah. But we understand that.
But he's broken himself into pieces a number of times. They let me do it, and I did Night at the Museum with Ben Stiller, mm-hmm. and they let me do my own stunts in that.
And you, by that time you were
80.
80, yeah, wow.
And I'm still doing them.
You say that you weren't thrilled with the final product of Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. What happened there?
Well, I think that's an overstatement. I felt it needed Walt Disney's touch. Walt Disney thought like a child, and he knew what to do. And I always felt if this had been a Disney movie, it would have been better. No, I'm very proud of it otherwise.
You came back to TV with the new Dick Van Dyke Show. And do you ever wonder why that one never really caught on? You had Carl Reiner again.
No, I had to, oh my God, I can't think of their name. I did a variety show.
Mm, yeah, you,
which
that was
on
popular.
For about 12, and we won an Emmy, but it got canceled. I don't know. I think I made a mistake in being married again. Mary did a wonderful show in which she played a single girl, and one day in the market, a woman hit me with her purse and said, "How dare you leave that wonderful Laura?" So I knew right then I'd made a mistake.
But this is also around the time that you were drinking rather heavily.
Yes.
And you underwent treatment in 72, publicly admitted your alcoholism, and that made you one of the first major stars actually to ever do something like that.
I think I was number two. Mercedes McCambridge, who did the voice in Exorcist, went before Congress and talked about it. And I thought this helps remove the stigma, you know, about Skid Row bums and lack of willpower. So I did come out publicly to show that a normal middle-class person can fall victim to it too.
Had it affected your career?
No, I don't think so, because I never drank at work or in public. I was a shy person, and I discovered that a martini lowered my inhibitions to some extent. That's why I started drinking.
You don't seem shy now, and I don't think you've had
a martini. I'm not shy anymore, no. I'm cured.
In 1974, you starred in a TV movie called The Morning After.
Yes.
Which you played an alcoholic ad executive who destroys his life.
That's true. That movie, I had quite a to-do with the National Council on Alcoholism. They wanted it to have a happy ending. And in that movie, the man doesn't make it. But I've had a number of people who've been in rehab. They show that movie to recovering alcoholics. And it seems to have some impact on him. So
and what about for you? Was it a way of dealing with some of the things that had happened with you?
No, as a matter of fact, David Walper produced that movie. He didn't know that I was undergoing recovery treatment at the time. But the director let me go. He said, obviously, you know what you're talking about.
But it also gave you a chance to do a really meaty, dramatic role.
Oh, yes.
And
I got a nomination, but I didn't win an Emmy.
And then you started playing villains. Now, were you worried that your good guy image might be affected by being a cold-blooded wife murderer in a Columbo episode? Or in Dick Tracy, you were the corrupt DA, weren't
That's
you?
Right, and then I played the murderer on a Matlock also. I wasn't worried about it and should have been. I got a lot of flack. People who wrote me and said, we don't want to see you being a bad guy. And bad guys are fun to play.
So it just meant that you were doing all sorts of things that you couldn't have imagined you'd be doing when you did that first Phil Silver show.
Oh, absolutely not.
Dick Van Dyke has written a memoir called My Lucky Life in and Out of Show Business, with a foreword by Carl Reiner, one of our favorite people here, published by Crown Archetype. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang. Oh, you pretty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, we love you. And in chitty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, what we'll do, near, far, in a motor car, oh, what a happy time we'll spend. Bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, our fine four-fendered friend. Chim 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 ch
chip, chip, chirree. A sweep is as lucky can be. Chim, chimini, chim, chimini, chim, chim, chiroo. Good luck, we're above when I shake hands with you. Or blow me a kiss. And that's lucky, too.
Bet you didn't know Dick Van Dyke was British. He's written a memoir called My Lucky Life in and Out of Show Business. It is published by Crown Archetype. Archetype is an odd imprint, isn't it?
Does that mean I'm an archetype?
Yeah, I don't know, but what happened with that accent? Did you have to do special training?
Well, I should have done special training. Let me put it that way. I've taken it on the chin from Britons now for 40 years, and I've had plenty of time to cast around for somebody to blame. But I was surrounded by British actors who never said, Dick, your accent stinks. And they gave me Pat O'Malley, an Irishman, to be the coach. So neither one of us were very good. I was concentrating on the singing and dancing. And I tell you, I have never been kidded so much in my life as I have by that terrible British accent.
But, you know, Hollywood in the old days, in the 30s, they would have Achim Tamara playing a Frenchman.
Yes.
They would, you know, you'd have French people played by Brits and Russians and
that's true.
Paul and anybody who had an accent.
I know. It didn't matter in those days.
So perhaps you weren't being held to the same kind of standard you would today.
No. Today you'd have to be much more authentic than that. And I even offered to go back and dub the accent to improve it, but they didn't have time for that.
For the DVD? You
yes.
could do it now.
I could. Although I'm not much better than I was then.
Well, you said when you started, you really hadn't done any dancing. So did
no.
you take lessons?
No, I didn't. I just took what Gal Champion was a choreographer who was good at taking what I could do and building on that. And then Mark Bro and Dee Dee Wood, who did Mary Poppins and Chitty, were just great at teaching me dance. And I seemed to have a natural ability for it and loved it. It was like flying.
Well, Debbie Reynolds told me that the hardest thing she had to do in Singing in the Rain was dancing with, in that case, Gene Kelly, and also
O'Connor.
Doing the lips and, yeah, Donald O'Connor, and lip syncing at
yes.
the same time. She said one thing always got lost.
I could imagine. But my God, she stood up to those two.
Well, she had
great.
Gene Kelly gave her a hard time. But it must be incredibly intense to try to do all of those things at the same time. If you're not a professional dancer, you're dancing on that level at the same time. You're trying to move your lips with the music.
Well, you know, I started out doing a record pantomime act. So that came very easy to me. I was also a great dubber because I could time it. So the lip syncing was always very simple for me. Mm. I could concentrate on the dancing.
What about the acting? Is this something that just came naturally, or did you wind up at a certain point thinking, I better take some lessons?
Here? No, I have never taken lessons. And my advice to anyone who says, if I want to get into show business, what should I do? Train. Train. I never did. And I'm a credible actor, but that's about it.
In other words, you think that if you had studied,
yes,
you would have gotten better roles?
I think I would have been a much better dancer and actor and singer because I just picked it up as I went along. So my voice is not really a singer's voice. I have adenoids.
I know. It's a nice bass baritone voice, no?
Yeah, it's pleasant enough. I got by.
Did you ever come to think of yourself as a good dancer?
I'm not a great dancer, and most professional dancers know it, but I can do things I never dreamed that I'd be able to do.
And members of my staff are very curious about something you said earlier about broken bones. They want to know, how many bones did you break and how?
I actually never broke a bone. I tore a leg muscle in Chitty Bang Bang, and just about 4 weeks ago, I had torn an Achilles heel. I had that operated on. But actually, a broken bone, I hurt my, what do they call it, the clavicle?
Mm-hmm. In your shoulder?
In Dick Tracy when I got shot. But other than that, I've managed to get through without any real injuries.
You said you own the Dick Van Dyke Show, or you own part
well,
of
I'm
it.
I'm one of the
And
owners,
then you yeah. served as chairman of Nickelodeon?
At its beginning, yes. When they first started, the Van Dyke Show was one of their first ones.
Was that just coincidental that you did the two, or were you trying to get into some other, get out of?
Coincidental, and it was a title only. I really didn't serve as any chairman. I just did their commercials for them.
Because you've also, at 68, you started another show, Diagnosis Murder.
Yes.
Many people are thinking of retiring at that age.
Well, I've retired many times. It's just, it's never worked. That that show was at 60, was it 68? I guess it was. It ran for 10 years, the longest job I ever had, and it was only picked up five or six shows at a time for 10 years. But it held on for that long. There was an audience for it, I think, because we kept it family-oriented.
And you, people probably don't know this, but you also did the computer graphics on that show?
I did some, yes.
What is that? Had you just picked that up along the way?
Yes, it became a hobby. I picked it up about 20 years ago when they first came out with a little user-friendly animation, and I've kept up with the technology over the years, and I'm pretty good today.
And you play with that now?
Oh, sure.
You're one of the older folks who isn't confused by your iPhone?
I don't even have an iPhone. I make pretty pictures on the computer. That's all I know.
Dick Van Dyke has written a memoir called My Lucky Life in and Out of Show Business. It is published by Crown Archetype. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. It seems to me that certain like-minded people wind up finding each other. We mentioned Mary Tyler Moore. Carol Burnett. When did you first work with her?
We both arrived in New York about the same time, in the mid-50s. And at that time, Gary Moore had an hour-and-a-half morning show every day. And Carol and I used to appear on there, not together, separately. But then we got to know each other, and we—
This is before you ever were in Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh, yes. This is the mid-50s. And we teamed up on a show called Mike Stokey's Pantomime Quiz, a charades game. And Howie Morris and Carol and myself and one other, we were the champions. We got $200 a week, which paid for our groceries, and we played that game, I think, for a couple of years. And then, of course, when she got her own show, I've been on her show a number of times over the years. So I know Carol very well.
And Howard Morris, he wound up with Sid Caesar.
With Sid, yes. Sid Caesar. And, of course, Carl came out of that. I consider myself a branch on the Sid Caesar family tree.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was... Maybe my memory is faulty, but that had to be one of the greatest television shows ever.
I think so.
I mean, I think it still would be funny.
You know, only 10 of those Kinneys survived. All the rest of them were destroyed. It changed the course of comedy, I think. Up until then, they'd all been vaudeville entertainers like Burl or nightclub entertainers. He was the first original television, and... Satirically, it's never been touched, I don't think.
But the Dick Van Dyke Show was filmed?
Yes,
I hope. So you weren't doing it live with kinescopes? Which...
No. No, we were filmed on 35mm, but in front of an audience, thank God. Mm-hmm. The only way to do comedy, as far as I'm concerned.
Because laugh tracks just sound so artificial.
We never used a laugh track, but we needed that audience to tell us what was going on. The audience does their half of the work, really.
But that means it's also performed like a play rather
yes.
than like a movie.
Right,
so you had
through.
To learn all of your lines and
yes.
every week?
Every week. Yeah, and that was the only way to do it, straight through like a play.
Have you been surprised by Betty White's career? I mean, she's
Isn't that something?
Is she older than you?
Yes, by about 4 years, I think. But she's never going to stop. Betty is just a phenomenon.
I understand you're also in an a cappella group, even though you say you can't sing.
I have a group of young men, all in their 30s, and me, called the Fantastics, and we do a lot of fundraising. We sang for the president at the Ford Theater this summer, and he asked me if I would I teach him my moves.
What are your best numbers?
Well, we feature things that I've done from Broadway and movies. And we do mostly children's things, a lot of Sesame Street, jazz versions. We sing in a lot of children's hospitals and that kind of thing.
When you say jazz version, you mean like high-lows kinds of arrangements?
We try. Not as good as the high-lows, but we're reaching for that.
Is there a possibility of any new movies?
Not in the offing, no.
Well, maybe a casting director's listening right now.
Well, let's hope so. I'm willing to play a villain.
And your brother, how long before he entered the business after you did? Later we're going to have Rob Lowe here, and his brother Chad got into the business as well. And you always wonder about that. Some people immediately see competition and sibling rivalry in situations like that.
No, I'm almost 6 years older. He came out when he was 16 to Los Angeles and saw my act and stole it and went home and did it in Illinois. That's how he started. And we just finished doing our version of The Sunshine Boys, the Neil Simon play, as two Gentile brothers. And it was quite successful. We've had an offer to come to town with it.
Your son, Barry, is also in the business.
Yeah. And I have two grandsons who have just signed a deal with New Line Cinema to write and direct and produce movies for pay TV. So the whole family's going to show business.
Are there any sitcoms that you admire, you've admired over the years? Obviously, you're an expert and you've thought a lot about the form. Yeah.
Well, I learned everything I know from Carl Reiner, obviously. I liked, I can't think of the name. What was the show about nothing?
Seinfeld.
I love the Seinfeld show, and everybody
another loves ensemble show, kind of like the Dick Van Dyke show in some ways. People just pop in.
So many of them today, as I said, are one-line joke after another. There's no relationships, not much story, and I find I don't laugh a lot.
That bothers me as well. There seems to be a fear that if you go more than 10 seconds without somebody making a wisecrack, no matter who it is, a guy delivers pizza and he has to make a wisecrack.
You're right.
And the Dick Van Dyke show and the Mary Tyler Moore show and a lot of the others
All
of
the
that
family.
Period, they would build to a joke.
Yes. I don't know whether television gave people ADD or it's the other way around.
But were you ever afraid, gee, this is going a little long before we are getting to something funny?
No. Because everything else was working. The characters and the relationships were working as a story. So we didn't worry that much about getting a laugh every second.
Dick Van Dyke is internationally recognized and accomplished performer. He's been recipient of the Theater World Award, a Tony, a Grammy, 4 Emmy Awards. And now maybe a Pulitzer because he's written a memoir.
Well, that would be something.
Is this it? Have you pretty much written everything you wanted to tell about yourself?
Yes. Writing a book never even occurred to me till the publisher came. I read the book, and I don't believe a word of it. It all sounds
lies, all lies. Dick Van Dyke, My Lucky Life in and Out of Show Business, a memoir, is published by Crown Archetype. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Gray skies are gonna clear up, put on a happy face. Brush off the clouds and cheer up, put on a happy face. Take off the gloomy mask of tragedy, it's not your style. You look so good that you'll be glad you decided to.